that spell-singers, warlocks, and aeromancers practice their arts openly in a shai, while shadowbinders and blood mages work terrible sorceries in the black of night. Why shouldn't there be dragons, too? No dragon, Iri said. Brave men kill them, for dragon, terrible evil beasts, it is known. It is known, agreed Jiqui. A trader from Karth once told me that dragons came from the moon, Blondoria said as she warmed a towel over the fire. Jiqui and Iri were of an age with Danny, Dothraki girls taken as slaves when Drogo destroyed their father's Khalasar. Doria was older, almost 20. Magister Illyrio had found her in a pleasure house in Lys. Silvery wet hair tumbled over her eyes as Danny turned her head, curious. The moon?
He told me the moon was an egg, Khaleesi, the Lysine girl said. Once there were two moons in the sky, but one wandered too close to the sun and cracked from the heat. A thousand dragons poured forth and drank the fire of the sun. That is why dragons breathe flame. One day the other moon will kiss the sun too, and then it will crack, and the dragons will return.
The two Dothraki girls giggled and laughed. You are foolish, strawhead slave, Iri said. Moon is no egg, moon is god. Woman, wife of sun, it is known. It is known, Jiqui agreed. Danny's skin was flushed and pink when she climbed from the tub. Jiqui laid her down to oil her body and scrape the dirt from her paws. Afterward, Iri sprinkled her with spice flour and cinnamon, while Doria brushed her hair until it shone like spun silver. She thought about the moon and eggs and dragons. Her supper was a simple meal of fruit and cheese and fry bread, with a jug of honeyed wine to wash it down. Doria, stay and eat with me, Danny commanded when she sent her other handmaids away. The Lysine girl had hair the color of honey, and eyes like the summer sky. She lowered those eyes when they were alone. You honor me, Khaleesi, she said, but it was no honor, only service. Long after the moon had risen, they sat together, talking. That night when Khal Drogo came, Danny was waiting for him. He stood in the door of her tent and looked at her with surprise. She rose slowly and opened her sleeping silks and let them fall to the ground. This night we must go outside, my lord, she told him, for the Dothraki believed that all things of importance in a man's life must be done beneath the open sky. Khal Drogo followed her out into the moonlight, the bells in his hair tinkling softly. A few yards from her tent was a bed of soft grass, and it was there that Danny drew him down. When he tried to turn her over, she put a hand to his chest. No, she said, this night I would look on your face. There is no privacy in the heart of the Khalasar. Danny felt the eyes on her as she undressed him, heard the soft voices as she did the things that Doria had told her to do. It was nothing to her. Was she not Khaleesi? His were the only eyes that mattered, and when she mounted him, she saw something there that she had never seen before. She rode him as fiercely as ever she had ridden her silver, and when the moment of his pleasure came, Khal Drogo called out her name. They were on the far side of the Dothraki Sea, when Jiqui brushed the soft swell of Danny's stomach with her fingers and said, Khaleesi, you are with child. I know, Danny told her. It was her 14th name day. Bran. the yard below, Rickon ran with the wolves. Bran watched him from his window seat. Wherever the boy went, Grey Wind was there first, loping ahead to cut him off, until Rickon saw him, screamed in delight, and went pelting off in another direction. Shaggy Dog ran at his heels, spinning and snapping if the other wolves came too close. His fur had darkened until he was all black, and his eyes were green fire. Bran Summer came last. He was silver and smoke, with eyes of yellow gold that saw all there was to see. Smaller than Grey Wind, and more wary. Bran thought he was the smartest of the litter. He could hear his brother's breathless laughter as Rickon dashed across the hard-packed earth on little baby legs. His eyes stung. He wanted to be down there, laughing and running. Angry at the thought, Bran knuckled away the tears before they could fall. His eighth name day had come and gone. He was almost a man grown now, too old to cry. "It was just a lie," he said bitterly, remembering the crow from his dream. "I can't fly. I can't even run."
"Crows are all liars,"
old Nan agreed, from the chair where she sat doing her needlework.
"I know a story about a crow."
"I don't want any more stories," Bran snapped, his voice petulant. He had liked old Nan and her stories once, before, but it was different now. They left her with him all day now to watch over him and clean him and keep him from being lonely. But she just made it worse. "I hate your stupid stories." The old woman smiled at him toothlessly.
"My stories? No, my little lord, not mine. These stories are before me. And after me, before you too."
She was a very ugly old woman, Bran thought spitefully, shrunken and wrinkled, almost blind, too weak to climb stairs, with only a few wisps of white hair left to cover a mottled pink scalp. No one really knew how old she was, but his father said she had been called Old Nan even when he was a boy. She was the oldest person in Winterfell for certain. Maybe the oldest person in the Seven Kingdoms. Nan had come to the castle as a wet nurse for a Brandon Stark whose mother had died birthing him. He had been an older brother of Lord Rickard, Bran's grandfather, or perhaps a younger brother, or a brother of Lord Rickard's father. Sometimes old Nan told it one way and sometimes another. In all the stories, the little boy died at three of a summer chill. But old Nan stayed on at Winterfell with her own children. She had lost both her sons to the war when King Robert won the throne, and her grandson was killed on the walls of Pyke during Balon Greyjoy's rebellion. Her daughters had long ago married and moved away and died. All that was left of her own blood was Hodor, the simple-minded giant who worked in the stables. But old Nan just lived on and on, doing her needlework and retelling her stories. "I don't care whose stories they are," Bran told her. "I hate them." He didn't want stories, and he didn't want old Nan. He wanted his mother and father. He wanted to go running with Summer loping beside him. He wanted to climb the broken tower and feed corn to the crows. He wanted to ride his pony again with his brothers. He wanted it to be the way it had been before.
"I know a story about a boy who hated stories," old Nan said with her stupid little smile, her needles moving all the while, click, 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 until Bran was ready to scream at her.
It would never be the way it had been, he knew. The crow had tricked him into flying, but when he woke up, he was broken, and the world was changed. They had all left him. His father and his mother and his sisters, and even his bastard brother John. His father had promised he would ride a real horse to King's Landing, but they'd gone without him. Maester Lewin had sent a bird off to Lord Eddard with a message, and another to Mother, and a third to John on the wall, but there had been no answers.
"Oft times the birds are lost, child," the maester had told him, There's many a mile and many a hawk between here and King's Landing. The message may not have reached them. Yet to Bran it felt as if they had all died while he had slept. Or perhaps Bran had died, and they had forgotten him. Jorri and Ser Roddick and Vaenpool had gone too, and Hullan and Harwin and Fat Tom, and a quarter of the guard. Only Rob and Baby Rickon were still here, and Rob was changed. He was Rob the Lord now, or trying to be. He wore a real sword and never smiled. His days were spent drilling the guard and practicing his swordplay, making the yard ring with the sound of steel as Bran watched forlornly from his window. At night he closeted himself with Maester Lewin, talking or going over account books. Sometimes he would ride out with Hallis Mollen, and be gone for days at a time, visiting distant holdfasts. Whenever he was away more than a day, Rickon would cry and ask Bran if Rob was ever coming back. Even when he was home at Winterfell, Rob the Lord seemed to have more time for Hallis Mollen and Theon Greyjoy than he ever did for his brothers.
"I could tell you a story about Brandon the Builder," old Ned said. "That was always your favorite."
Thousands and thousands of years ago, Brandon the Builder had razed Winterfell, and some said the Wall. Bran knew the story, but it had never been his favorite. Maybe one of the other Brandons had liked that story. Sometimes Nan would talk to him as if he were her Brandon, the baby she had nursed all those years ago, and sometimes she confused him with his uncle Brandon, who was killed by the Mad King before Bran was even born. She had lived so long, Mother had told him once, that all the Brandon Starks had become one person in her head. "That's not my favorite," he said. "My favorites were the scary ones." He heard some sort of commotion outside and turned back to the window. Rickon was running across the yard toward the gatehouse, the wolves following him. But the tower faced the wrong way for Bran to see what was happening. He smashed a fist on his thigh in frustration and felt nothing.
"Oh, my sweet summer child," old Nan said quietly, "what do you know of fear? Fear is for the winter, my little lord, when the snows fall 100 feet deep and the ice wind comes howling out of the north. Fear is for the long night, when the sun hides its face for years at a time, and little children are born and live and die all in darkness, while the dire wolves grow gaunt and hungry, and the white walkers move through the woods."
"You mean the others?" Bran said querulously.
"The others," old Nan agreed. "Thousands and thousands of years ago, a winter fell that was cold and hard, and endless beyond all memory of man. There came a night that lasted a generation, and kings shivered and died in their castles, even as the swine herds in their hovels. Women smothered their children rather than see them starve, and cried and felt their tears freeze on their cheeks."
Her voice and her needles fell silent, and she glanced up at Bran with pale, filmy eyes and asked,
"So, child, this is the sort of story you like?"
"Well," Bran said reluctantly, "yes, only..." Old Nan nodded.
"In that darkness, the others came for the first time," she said as her needles went click, click, click. "They were cold things, dead things, that hated iron and fire and the touch of the sun, and every creature with hot blood in its veins. They swept over whole forests and cities and kingdoms, felled heroes and armies by the score, riding their pale dead horses and leading hosts of the slain. All the swords of men could not stay their advance, and even maidens and suckling babies found no pity in them. They hunted the maids through frozen forests and fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children.
The voice had dropped very low, almost to a whisper, and Bran found himself leaning forward to listen.
Now these were the days before the Andals came, and long before the women fled across the narrow sea from the cities of the Roin, and the hundred kingdoms of those times were the kingdoms of the first men, who had taken these lands from the children of the forest. Yet here and there, in the vastness of the woods, the children still lived in their wooden cities and hollow hills, and the faces in the trees kept watch. So as cold and death filled the earth, the last hero determined to seek out the children, in the hopes that their ancient magics could win back what the armies of men had lost. He set out into the dead lands with a sword, a horse, a dog, and a dozen companions. For years he searched, until he despaired of ever finding the children of the forest in their secret cities. One by one his friends died, and his horse, and finally even his dog, and his sword froze so hard the blade snapped when he tried to use it, and the other smelled the hot blood in him, and came silent on his trail, stalking him with packs of pale white spiders, big as hounds.
The door opened with a bang, and Bran's heart leapt up into his mouth in sudden fear. But it was only Maester Lewin, with Hodor looming on the stairway behind him. "Hodor," the stable boy announced, as was his custom, smiling hugely at them all. Maester Lewin was not smiling.
"We have visitors," he announced, "and your presence is required, Bran."
"I'm listening to a story now," Bran complained.
"Stories wait, my little lord, and when you come back to them, why, here they are,"
old Nan said.
"Visitors are not so patient, and oft-times they bring stories of their own."
"Who is it?" Bran asked Maester Lewin.
"Tyrion Lannister and some men of the Night's Watch, with a word from your brother John. Rob is meeting with them now. Hodor, will you help Bran down the hall?"
"Hodor,"
Hodor agreed happily. He ducked to get his great shaggy head under the door. Hodor was nearly 7 feet tall. It was hard to believe that he was the same blood as old Nan. Bran wondered if he would shrivel up as small as his great-grandmother when he was old. It did not seem likely, even if Hodor lived to be 1,000. Hodor lifted Bran as easily as if he were a bale of hay and cradled him against his massive chest. He always smelled faintly of horses, and it was not a bad smell. His arms were thick with muscle and matted with brown hair. "Hodor," he said again. Theon Greyjoy had once commented that Hodor did not know much, but no one could doubt that he knew his name. Old Nan had cackled like a hen when Bran told her that, and confessed that Hodor's real name was Walder. No one knew where Hodor had come from, she said, but when he started saying it, they started calling him by it. It was the only word he had. They left old Nan in the tower room with her needles and her memories. Hodor hummed tunelessly as he carried Bran down the steps and through the gallery, with Maester Lewin following behind, hurrying to keep up with the stable boy's long strides. Rob was seated in father's high seat, wearing ringmail and boiled leather, and the stern face of Rob the Lord. Theon Greyjoy and Halas Mullen stood behind him. A dozen guardsmen lined the grey stone walls beneath tall, narrow windows. In the centre of the room the dwarf stood with his servants, and four strangers in the black of the night's watch. Bran could sense the anger in the hall at the moment Hodar carried him through the doors. "Any man of the night's watch is welcome here at Winterfell for as long as he wishes to stay," Rob was saying with the voice of Rob the Lord. His sword was across his knees, the steel bare for all the world to see. Even Bran knew what it meant to greet a guest with an unsheathed sword. "Any man of the night's watch," the dwarf repeated, "but not me. Do I take your meaning, boy?" Rob stood and pointed at the little man with his sword. "I am the Lord while my mother and father are away, Lannister. I am not your boy."
"If you are a lord, you might learn a lord's courtesy," the little man replied, ignoring the sword point in his face. "Your bastard brother has all your father's graces, it would seem."
"John," Bran gasped out from Hodor's arms. The dwarf turned to look at him.
"So it is true, the boy lives. I could scarce believe it. You Starks are hard to kill."
"You Lannister had best remember that," Rob said, lowering his sword. "Hodor, bring my brother here."
"Hodor,"
Hodor said, as he trotted forward, smiling, and set Bran in the high seat of the Starks, where the lords of Winterfell had sat since the days when they called themselves the Kings of the North. The seat was cold stone, polished smooth by countless bottoms. The carved heads of dire wolves snarled on the ends of its massive arms. Bran clasped them as he sat, his useless legs dangling. The great seat made him feel half a baby. Rob put a hand on his shoulder. "You said you had business with Bran. Well, here he is, Lannister." Bran was uncomfortably aware of Tyrion Lannister's eyes. One was black and one was green, and both were looking at him, studying him, weighing him.
"I am told you are quite a climber, Bran," the little man said at last. "Tell me, how is it you happened to fall that day?"
"I never," Bran insisted. "He never fell. Never, never, never." "The child does not remember anything of the fall, or the climb that came before it," said Maester Luin gently.
"Curious," said Tyrion Lannister.
"My brother is not here to answer questions, Lannister," Rob said curtly. "Do your business, be on your way."
"I have a gift for you," the dwarf said to Bran. "Do you like to ride, boy?"
Maester Luin came forward.
"My lord, the child has lost the use of his legs. He cannot sit a horse."
"Nonsense," said Lannister.
"With a right horse and the right saddle, even a cripple can ride."
The word was a knife through Bran's heart. He felt tears come unbidden to his eyes.
"I'm not a cripple."
"Then I am not a dwarf," the dwarf said with a twist of his mouth.
"My father will rejoice to hear it."
Greyjoy laughed.
"What sort of horse and saddle are you suggesting?" Maester Luin said.
"A smart horse," Lannister replied. "The boy cannot use his legs to command the animal, so you must shape the horse to the rider.
Teach it to respond to the reins, to the voice. I would begin with an unbroken yearling, with no old training to be unlearned."
He drew a roll of paper from his belt.
"Give this to your saddler. He will provide the rest."
Maester Luin took the paper from the dwarf's hand, curious, as a small grey squirrel. He unrolled it, studied it.
"I see. You draw nicely, my lord. Yes, this ought to work. I should have thought of this myself. It came easier to me, maester. It's not terribly unlike my own saddles."
"Will I truly be able to ride?" Bran asked. He wanted to believe them, but he was afraid. Perhaps it was just another lie. The crow had promised him that he could fly.
"You will," the dwarf told him, "and I swear to you, boy, on horseback you will be as tall as any of them."
Rob Stark seemed puzzled. "Is this some trap, Lannister? What's Bran to you? Why should you want to help him? Your brother John has asked it of me, and I have a tender spot in my heart for cripples and bastards and broken things. Tyrion Lannister placed a hand over his heart and grinned. The door to the yard flew open. Sunlight came streaming across the hall as Rickon burst in, breathless. The direwolves were with him. The boy stopped by the door, wide-eyed, but the wolves came on. Their eyes found Lannister, or perhaps they caught his scent. Summer began to growl first. Grey wind picked it up. They padded towards the little man, one from the right and one from the left. "The wolves do not like your smell, Lannister," Theon Greyjoy commented.
"Perhaps it's time I took my leave," Tyrion said.
He took a step backward, and Shaggy Dog came out of the shadows behind him, snarling. Lannister recoiled, and Summer lunged at him from the other side. He reeled away, unsteady on his feet, and Greywind snapped at his arm.